Peter's problem could be our downfall, or Peter's problem could be our source of victory. Looking in Luke chapter 22 this morning and verse 21, we read these words. But behold, the hand of him that betrayeth me is with me on the table, and truly the Son of Man goeth as it was determined, but woe unto that man by whom he is betrayed. And they, that is the disciples, began to inquire among themselves which of them it was that should do this thing. Jesus is at the last dinner he's going to have with his disciples before he dies. We looked last week, he's telling them that he is the Passover lamb. He's preparing them to understand that his death is not just a random event, that it is not just something that happened out of the blue. This is the way that man's sins can be forgiven. My blood is the New Testament. You had an Old Testament with sacrifices that were with lambs that you brought every year. My blood is now the New Testament. There's a new understanding that begins today because you will now see me as the fulfillment of every promise and every prophecy in the Old Testament. And he tells them while he's sitting there that someone's going to betray him. And the disciples begin talking about it. All but one. Why is it all but one of the disciples? Why would I say that? Because the betrayer already knew who he was. We already looked at that. He'd already gone at the beginning of the chapter to the Pharisees, and he had covenanted with them to sell Jesus for a certain amount of silver. And so Jesus says, one of you is going to betray me. And it would have been interesting, I think, unless Judas was a very good, you know, put on the stone face where you don't show, just to wonder where his eyes might have wandered while he, you know how you do when you say, when you got a group of kids, you say, somebody was outside and broke a window. And you, if you can keep your eyes on the whole group, you can pretty well figure out who it is without any one of them opening their mouth. Because some of them are going to go, like, who's in trouble? And somebody's going to have their eyes. And their eyes are either going to get stuck on the person who's speaking, and they won't be able to move because they're now so afraid, or their eyes are going to hit the floor hoping that the person who said it doesn't notice. If I don't see them, they can't see me. But the disciples, at least 11 of them, are trying to figure out who it is that's going to betray Jesus. But on the heels of that, wow, Jesus has just said, someone's going to betray me. I'm going to die for the sins of the world. But right on the heels of that, what are the disciples talking about? Look at the next verse, verse 24. And there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the... You got two conversations going on at the dinner table, and that sometimes happens in our homes. One conversation, do you think it could be me that will betray him? Is it going to be you? Do you think I'll be the biggest and the best? Back and forth, here they go. And this is not a new problem for the disciples. You know that as they walked with Jesus, they had this before. And Jesus said, hey, what are you talking about? Now, like he didn't already know. And they didn't want to answer the question. Why didn't they want to answer the question? Because they were talking about which of them would be the greatest. And that's not the point, is it? Should that ever be the goal in our life, that we would be the greatest? You know, you have talents and abilities. Take them, use them, perfect them to the level that you can. But you know what? The goal is not that you be the greatest in anything, but that God always be the greatest in all things. That he should have the preeminence. So the disciples are still confused as to what this is that's going on. They have feared to ask Jesus in the past about this death issue because they were scared of it. Sometimes we simply miss the truth because we are consumed with ourselves. I have had, I don't know how many people in the few years that I have been in the ministry, come and say, Pastor, I'd like some Bible advice. Well, I love that, you know. Why? Because that's the only advice I've got. So, all right, I'd like some Bible advice on, and then they give a situation. And the only Bible advice I can give is not what they want. And you know what they do with that Bible advice? throw it out. But they don't just throw it out, they throw me out too. You know why? Because you don't understand. God does. You see, sometimes we want someone to tell us what we want to hear. And the reason we want someone to tell us what we want to hear, that what you want to do is okay, that what you're wearing is fine, that what you said doesn't matter, that what you're watching on TV is better than so many other people just keep watching, that where you go, no problem, that what you're... We want someone to tell us those things. And when they don't, many times we miss the truth of what someone is trying to tell us because we are consumed with ourselves. And the disciples missed the gospel that Jesus told them. They didn't get it until later, when Jesus was risen, that he said the temple would be destroyed and built again in 3 days. Then they realized it. Why didn't they realize it? They've been fighting the whole time they've been together as to which one of them would get to be the greatest of any. And when you're that way, when pride creeps in, it is very hard to realize what the truth is that you need. Jesus tries to help them again, as he always does. And he said, verse 25, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them. And they that exercise authority upon them are called benefactors. But ye, that is my disciples and followers, shall not be so. But he that is greatest among you, let him be the younger. Wait a minute, we don't usually put the younger over the elder. And he that is chief, as he that doth serve. For whether is greater, he that sitteth at meat or he that serveth? Is not he that sitteth at meat greater? But I am among you as he that serveth. In our world, the one who sits down at the table and gets served is the greater of the two people. That's culture. Jesus said that's the way it is. But I am God in flesh, and I am here serving. So you've got it all backwards. The greatest doesn't have to just be served. The greatest serves others. Get it in your heads, disciples. It's not a matter of who gets the most authority. It's the principle of who gives the most of themselves to other people. And then Jesus tells them, as he relates this to them, that they have a future that is bright. And they're going to get this part, I'm sure. Verse 28, ye are they which have continued with me in my temptations, and I appoint unto you a kingdom, as my Father hath appointed unto me, that ye may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Buddy, that is good words for them. That is, everything is about to tip upside down, but they have been waiting, as all Israel has. When does the kingdom come, and what's our part in it? And Jesus just said, you're going to eat at my table, in my kingdom, and you're going to be rulers sitting on 12 thrones over the nation. Well, I did hear something you said, Jesus. I don't know about this death thing, but I did hear that ruling thing. So which one's mine? Which tribe do I get? Problem is, that's future. There's something present that we need to address. Verse 31. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that thy faith fail not. When thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. Now Jesus just said, you got something really good coming. And then he looks over at Peter. He said, Peter, you got some rough road ahead of you. Satan hath desired to have you. Now think back about Job for just a minute. We have a similar picture going to happen here. Job had everything, and Job was a pretty important person. Satan said, the only reason he blesses you is because of all that he has. So God gives to Satan the authority to touch Job's life, to take from Job the things that he has. Why? Because Satan said, Job will turn on you, God. And God says to Job, if we use the language here, sift him. Sift him. Shake him around. Throw the wheat up in the air and see if anything blows away. That man is 100%. That man is my kind of guy. He is a righteous man. He is just and he is good. You sift him. And so Satan does. And Job comes out on the other side, even as God said of Job that he would. We find here that Jesus says to Peter, Peter, Satan wants to find out what you're really made of. You have followed me and you have walked on water. You have followed me, and when I asked, do you know who I am? You boldly said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. You have been with me in all of the blessings, Peter. You, Peter, when I had to pay a tax, went out, caught a fish, and came back with the money that was in the mount. You've seen it all, Peter. You've been up on the Mount of Transfiguration with me, Peter. So it's not odd to think of Peter stepping out boldly and saying, we have the Christ. But Satan wants to find out if you're for real. What do you think? Jesus doesn't turn Satan away. But Jesus does care about what Peter's about to go into and prays for Peter that his faith fail not. And then gives Peter a command. Peter, after the test that's going to come on you, and you get right with me again, what does that mean? It means, Peter, you're going to have trouble in this, and you're going to turn. You're going to turn on me, Peter. But when you are done, when the testing is done, and you turn your heart back toward me, then take what you have learned and strengthen other people that they not go through the same thing you have. We're talking about Peter's problem could either be your downfall. What went for Peter could happen to you, or you could use what happened to Peter and be the source of your victory because you'll learn something from Peter in what he goes through. Satan wants to know in our lives as well, are we more than just talk? Do we just talk the religious, fundamental Baptist talk? Or do we actually walk something? Satan will use difficulty to find out how much of the truth men really believe. Notice that Jesus does not ignore this, does not take it lightly, but prays for Peter. He knows the difficulty and he cares for us, he prays for us, but he also knows that the difficulty that Peter goes through, the failure that Peter has, and how many of you know the failure Peter's going to have? Remember? Oh, we know you're one of those Galilee. You're one of those guys that was with Jesus. And Peter, the bold, thou art the Christ guy. Huh? Jesus? No, not me. No, don't, not that guy. Don't know him. Jesus says, Peter, when you're converted, I got work for you to do. Peter, after you have your stumble, after you give in to the flesh, then, Peter, you take that and you go help other people. Understand this. When you fall, if you would get right with God and not hide from your past, you could use your past and the growth back into Christ to help other people. That's what Jesus said. When you have fallen and are brought back, turn back. Now, use that to help somebody else. You get victory over some vice in your life, don't hide it and say, oh, I never had a vice. I never had a sin that was so strong I fell to it. You know what you do? You only weaken the rest of the body of Christ because they look and go, oh, I could never live as pure as that person. You have fallen, yes, yes. If you have ever been converted, if you have ever repented, then what you have repented of and the power that God has given should be used to help somebody else to succeed. Now, he spoke to Peter. Peter ought to understand the Old Testament. The righteous or the just falleth how many times? 7 times. And rises again. It's comforting to know that even after I fail, God has a work to do for me if I'll simply turn back. The work may be limited. There may be some areas I forfeit because of what I do. But listen, you do not forfeit being able to serve God if you would turn back. Look at chapter 22, verse 33, because Peter evidences a bit of a problem. And he said unto him, Lord, I am ready to go with thee both into prison and to death. I'm ready. Don't worry, Jesus. I'm not going to fall. I got this thing pretty well taken care of. Prison? Lord, I'm not bothered by prisons. Death? Lord, I don't care about death. I'm going with you wherever you go. Sign me up. These guys, I don't know about them, but Lord, I'm ready. I have done the training. I am ready. I'm going. Here I am. Sign me up. Okay? What did Jesus say? He said, I tell thee, Peter, the cock shall not crow this day before thou shalt three times deny that thou knowest me. If you read these two verses together, you get the sense that Peter had a different thought of his own preparation than Jesus did. I'm ready, Lord! And Jesus says, Peter, three times tonight you're going to prove that you're not ready. How could Peter have such a perspective? It was so different from Jesus' perspective. How is it that you and I could have a perspective about our own preparation and strength that is different than the way that God sees us? Could we have such a problem? Could that problem exist in our churches to the extent that we no longer confess sin? That we no longer get on our knees and beg God to strengthen or purify or protect us? How many of you have ever said or heard, you think this, you don't have to raise your hand, I'm not worried about me, it's the other driver. Have you ever thought that? I know people have said that to us, you know, we're going to go driving, oh, we're praying for you tonight, you know, we're not really worried about you, Pastor, but we're worried about the other guy, you know, and I feel the same way. I'm not really worried about me. I know where I'm going to be on the road. It's the guy that's driving near me that I'm not ready for, right? You know, Pastor, have you ever thought this or said this? Pastor, I'm really concerned for our young people today. When do we stop being young? Like, 90? We have this with young people. Don't you trust me? Ever hear a young person say that to a parent or an adult? Do you know why we make any one of these three or other statements? We have a greater confidence in our own abilities than we do anybody else's. We have a greater sense of confidence in our own preparation and ability to discern right and wrong than anyone else's. So that we will say, you know, I'm going to go out driving. Look, I'm not worried about me. I would have said that the night I fell asleep at the wheel. I would have said the very same thing. I'm not worried about me. It's the other guy. So why was I asleep at the wheel? Same reason Peter had a problem. Pride. I didn't know my own physical limitations. And until I got to the edge of my physical limitations, I did not open my eyes to say, oh, I could be the one falling asleep at the wheel. Now, with that awareness, I am much more prepared not to do that. Why? Because now I can feel what's going on in my body and say, you know what? Danger is coming. We're very concerned for our young people. We are. Very concerned for our young people. They live in a day much different than we did. But can I tell you, by the way, we're living in the day that they are. Have you ever noticed that? Young people are growing up in such a wicked world, we are concerned for their safety and their hearts. Well, guess what? None of us are living last year. We're all living this year in the same technology world that they are, with the same billboards, same awful magazines in the racks when you go through the checkout aisle. Same world that sells the same cigarettes, same alcohol, same video games. Everything that they can have access to can come into your home as well. And guess what? Just because you're older doesn't mean you have any greater strength to resist the awful sin of the devil. He's finding, you know, I listen to young people and adults say, oh, that cartoon is so funny. Do you know that most cartoons now, just like the puppets that Barry Webb does, now, please, I'm not associating Barry Webb with the cartoons of the world, except for this. Most cartoons are not written for children. Did you listen to Barry Webb's puppets at all? Do you know that he made you laugh? And the children didn't even understand some of the reason why you were laughing. When he talks about, in one of his puppet shows, he talks about David and Goliath. Did he do David and Goliath while he was here? No? Okay. He's got the puppets up there, and they're telling about the guys who were on the side of Israel, the good guys. And so one of the puppets says, do they wear white? No. Do they drive white trucks? No. But it's not just white trucks. He said, does he say Chevy or Ford? He says white Chevys. He says, no. And then there were the bad guys, the Philistines. Did they wear black? No. Did they drive black Fords? And the adults, as you listen, are laughing. And the little children sitting on the front row are looking at the puppets going, good guys, bad guys. And the adults are saying, yeah, I drive a Ford or I drive a Chevy. And what's he doing? He is communicating through a child's avenue something to the heart of an adult to get the adult into what he's talking about. Do you understand that much of the stuff we call sin that the children shouldn't listen to is being designed and written so that adults who watch children will also watch and be influenced by that same stuff? How many people have children that come into a home, sit down, and they go, oh, they're only watching cartoons, and sit in the same room with them and laugh at the same stuff because the world says, I can get you because you don't think it's going to get you. Peter said, I'm ready. And we sometimes say, I'm so concerned for our young people. And in so doing, I am grateful for your prayers and concerns for them, but who are you praying for regarding your heart? Who's doing that prayer? Lord, open my eyes to my area of weakness, my area of struggle, because guess what? Just because we reach 40 or 50 or 60 or 70, the devil doesn't, they're too old to be reached anymore. I guess I'll just go after the children. As I look at the text, this is a dangerous and not a biblical approach to life. Listen to Romans chapter 12, verse 3. For I say, through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think, here's the next word, soberly. What does soberly mean? Seriously. Seriously, then, I want you to think today about you, not about the children, unless you are a children, and then think about you. Not about the other guy that's out there that is tempted by the world, but you. I'm the preacher, so I will show you how to think about you. No, preacher. We know about more preachers falling out of ministry than we do church people falling out of churches. Why is that? Well, because it's big news. Yeah, but it's happening is the reason. Just because you're a preacher, just because you're a church member, just because you're a mom or a dad, just because you've raised three kids that all went into ministry or whatever it is, doesn't mean that you no longer have difficulty. Paul said this in 1 Corinthians 9:27, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection that after, by any means, after I have preached to others, I myself should be a cast away, a disqualified person in the race for Christ. Now, wait a minute. Why is Paul? I mean, this is one of the guys we lift up. He was a despiser of the gospel. He was rough against Christ. And then, I mean, he's the guy who went around helping churches know how to live. And he said, I'm struggling with you Galatians. I'm trying to bring you again to the place where you are new in Christ because you're living in the flesh again. And yet this very same man had to write these words, I die daily. That's how he kept his body in subjection so that when he had preached to others, he didn't end up on the side of the road. He was saying, look, I may know the truth, but I'm trying to make sure that I stay within that truth because I could fall just like anybody else. John, also writing in 2 John verse 4, says, I rejoice greatly that I found of thy children walking in truth. That's wonderful. So I'm grateful that I see this. But he said in verse 7, there's a problem. There are deceivers that are entered into the world. But since you're walking in truth, those deceivers are no problem. Is that his response? No. Verse number 8 said, look to yourselves that we lose not those things which we have wrought. You are walking in truth, and I'm thrilled with it. It's wonderful. But that guy right over there is a deceiver, and you better be careful, because it's not just the young people, it's not just the other guy, it's not just the church down the street, it's us who could lose out on something that God wants us to have, something that we have possessed in the past. You know, there are believers who have had the peace of God in their life and enjoyed it, and then fell unto deception and lost that peace in their heart. Believers that had direction from God and then lost that direction. Well, how could that be? Did they lose their salvation? No. They were deceived. Peter also wrote, this is John, Paul, this is John, this is Peter, "Ye therefore, beloved, seeing ye know these things before," you've already got something, "beware lest ye also, being led away with the error of the wicked, fall from your own steadfastness." Look, preacher, don't worry about me. I am sure about my standards, my music, my dress, my whatever it is. Preacher, don't worry about me. I've been in church since I was a toddler. I won't ever be leaving this place. Anybody want to listen to Peter one more time? "Lord, I'm ready to go with thee to prison and to death." Preacher, you don't have to worry about me. I am. You know, the Bible says, "Be ye therefore steadfast, unmovable." I'm that person. Look, I built this church, you know? I'm not going anywhere. Wouldn't that be dangerous for any of us? God's personal warning comes to us through Peter. You and I can be tempted, and we can fall. Beware. And it's dangerous to think that we cannot fall, for that is just the time that we will fall, isn't it? "Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall." It's dangerous for us not to know our own weaknesses. Do you know why? Because we may end up simply fortifying our strengths and leaving our weaknesses completely unguarded. I don't have a great struggle today with music like I did when I was in college or before. I listen to awful music, and I listen to good music. I listen to everything from classical music, through all the church styles of music, through all of the different groups of music. I mean, if you could take Steve Green, where he started, and the Gaithers, and you could go all the way up to things that were heavy metal style. You go through Michael W. Smith and DC Talk and did rap style. I mean, I listened to every style of music that had Christian name on it and some that didn't, because I worked in a place, like I worked at a Pizza Hut, where they played music all the time. So I listened to it all, and I really didn't have much trouble with it at all, any of it at all. I just liked it. And then God got a hold of my heart, and I began to commit to God this area regarding music, and I began to build some barriers around me. I could spend the rest of my life building more barriers there and miss the fact that there are some other areas of my life that are weak. Make sense? Now, should I say today, I've got so many barriers, I'm strong here? No. I put up some barriers, and then I say, "Lord, by thy grace, help keep me here. Use these barriers." What are the barriers? Well, in church work, we have some things that we do to keep the music in the church appropriate. And it's checked by me ahead of time before it's done. Why would that be? Because I don't want to hear it and get tempted by it. Because I know I could fall in an area where I have fallen before. So I set some things around me, but I know it's a weakness, but I can't say, "Well, I found my weakness. Now I'll just do whatever I want to do." No. Now I need to open my eyes and say, "Okay, Lord, protect me here, but show me somewhere else where I could fall." Do you know that some of us probably this morning have overestimated our own spiritual preparation for the battle that's ahead of us today? We may have overestimated our own spiritual preparation to face the temptations that are coming. The text is pretty plain. If we look in verse 39, he goes up to the Mount of Olives, beginning now in verse 40. He's gone to the Mount of Olives with his disciples. "And when he was at the place, he said unto them, Pray that ye enter not into temptation. And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer and was come to his disciples, he found them sleeping. Lord, I'm willing to die and willing to go to prison, but I don't even know that I can stay up tonight and pray. Good night. Peter said he was willing to die for Christ. He was even willing to fight with a sword. Verse 47 says, and while he yet spake, behold, a multitude, and he that was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near unto Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said unto him, Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss? And when they, which were about him, saw what would follow, they understood the purpose. They said unto him, Lord, shall we smite with the sword? I'm with, Lord, if I got a weapon, I'm ready. And one of them smote the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. You know who that was? The book of John tells us that was Peter. Peter looked like he's pretty well prepared. He said, I'm going to die with you. Lord, I'll fight for you. I'm here. And Jesus answered, suffer ye thus far. You know what Jesus did to that man's ear? He put it back on and told Peter in another passage, put your sword away. Peter, you got to fight this battle without physical weapons. I was just studying with Hannah this last week, one of the things that Benjamin Franklin wrote in Poor Richard's Almanac. How many observe Christ's birthday? How few his precepts? Oh, 'tis easier to keep holidays than commandments. I'll die for Christ. Okay, if you're really ready to die for him, you're going to have to show it by living for him. I'm willing to say anything for Christ. Well, then go out and tell somebody that you're a Christian and tell them how to become a Christian. Maybe I'm not as spiritual as I thought I was. I'd get rid of anything in my life for Jesus. Look, preacher, don't worry about me. Then shut off the TV and cancel that cable so that you can put purity in your mind and open this book for more hours a night than you watch TV. Then tell me that you're ready to walk with Him. But don't tell me if this sits on the shelf and we look at it for 30 minutes a day that we're ready to go anywhere with Him. Now, I don't want to be ugly, but that's the truth. We're not ready spiritually if this book has less influence in our life than any other book. Peter was willing, but he was unable because of a spiritual deficiency. And I don't doubt that anybody in here today has a desire to please God. I don't doubt that any of us have a thought that we could please God and think that we should please God, but a spiritual deficiency in Peter became the weakness of Peter so that he fell. Jesus said, Satan hath desired to have you. What does Peter say when they come to him? I don't know him. What did Peter do after he betrayed Jesus and the cock did crow? He wept bitterly. What Jesus said of me was actually true. I find great comfort in this passage. I said, Peter, it doesn't sound like comfort the way you're saying it. Peter was going to fall and Jesus knew it. He said, Peter, when you're done, when you've been through this, I still love you, Peter. When you've been through this, strengthen other people. The comfort is that God will allow my failure, if I will use it as such, to be a stepping stone for the victory for other people. How? If I will confess, repent, if I will be converted, then I don't make excuses for my sin. I don't hide what I've done. I simply use that as a stepping stone to say, look, this is what happened to me. You could, from here, step up higher than I have been. You could use my failure as a way to protect you from failure. What did Jesus say to Peter after he was risen from the dead and he meets the disciples there on the side of the Sea of Galilee? He looks at Peter and says to Peter, lovest thou me more than these, Peter? What did Peter say? Lord, you know that I do. So what did Jesus tell him to do? Feed my sheep, feed my lambs. That's what he said three times. Asked question. Why did Jesus say that? Come back to where he was here. Peter, when thou art converted, strengthen thy brethren. Who are the brethren? It's the lambs of Jesus Christ. It's the followers, right? Peter, once you know That I am who I am. That I am who I said I am. That I am the Christ that you proclaimed me to be. Once you find me to be true and you understand that you have failed, then take that truth and help other people. Did Peter do that? The answer is yes. Peter wrote in 1 Peter 1:5 that we are kept by the power of God. Peter knew that firsthand. Because Peter fell and he denied Christ, and yet he was still held within the power of his hand as a child of God. Peter wrote in 1 Peter 1:7, the trial of your faith being much more precious than of gold that perishes. Peter said, look, I've been through the fire. I gave up on Christ in that moment of weakness. I said, I don't know him, but I came out on the other side of that better than I was before. You're going to go through trial and it's going to hurt. But when you come out, if you'll turn to him, you will be better than you were before. And it's much better than anything you could ever receive. How does he say it's better than gold? Because Judas got the gold. He got the silver. And he cast it all back, and it meant nothing. Peter, 1 Peter 4:12 said, beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you. It's going to come. 2 Peter 1:5, and beside this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge. Why does Peter say that? Because we're not there yet. We need to grow. Why do I encourage you to be in our service Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night? It's not because I think it's fun for you to look at me. I know that's not true. It's because there's Bible truth that you need regularly from God to help you to grow. And yet, we can think in our head, I'll be all right. I know more than, I hope somebody comes, but I don't need to be there because. Peter, the one who failed, who said, I'm ready, Lord, wrote to the believers and said, give all diligence. That's all of your effort to grow and to mature and not to fail. 2 Peter 5:6 says, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Peter said, Lord, I'm ready. And then he wrote and said, get yourself under God's power and let God do the saying that you're ready. Why did Peter say that? Because he already knew what it was to say, I'm concerned for the other guy without thinking about himself. What is the spiritual deficiency? It's pride. It's personal confidence. It's self-esteem. Our greatest spiritual asset is not a false humility. Oh, preacher, don't worry about me. I know all of my weaknesses. Listen, you don't know all your weaknesses. And just saying you've got a weakness is no benefit to you until you find the strength in God. Peter said, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God. And if you're going to confess weakness, that is not all. Because many people say, look, I have a hard time with... and then fill in the sin. And then walk out and do that sin. Okay, so it's just saying you've got a weakness. Now you need to recognize the weakness and then in humility toward God, trust him for the strength that you have need of. You're recognizing that you can't, but God can. We're not giving simple lip service to the Bible. We're saying, God, I need you in every trial. I want to ask you this morning, could you be honest? Could we pray and ask God to help us to be honest with ourselves and with God about the reality of our own spiritual condition? Our own preparation for the battles that are about to come as Paul did. Because if we're not, we are easy targets for the devil who wants to sift us and say, they're just talk. It's all they've got. A bunch of Bible verses that they quote, but none of them go down into their heart to change them. So this morning, Peter's problem can either be your downfall. You say, you know what, I think the world has done a great disservice to the church and we have fallen for it. Say, just one? Well, I'll mention just one. Do you know the rating system they use for movies? What does G mean? Okay, PG. PG-13. Four. Okay, R. All right, now, which of those should an adult watch? The world says any one of them. Which one should a teenager watch, beginning at PG-13 with their parents and below? What about a child? Well, G or with their parents, PG. What do they say? That the measure of sinfulness that you are capable of dealing with in your movies increases as you age. So that as you mature, those words, we call it mature content. As you mature, you are able to see people wearing fewer and fewer clothes, and it won't hurt you because you are mature. If you don't get it, come up here and I'll hit you in the head. You are capable of dealing with that. That's the lust of your flesh. And the world says as you get bigger, you can handle it. Oh, I'm so concerned for our children. They're watching movies that they should never see. What about us? Where's our TV set? I don't know if they've gotten any better since I was in high school, but anybody see what cheerleaders wear? I've been out of high, I see 95 is when I graduated high school. Wow. Somebody, this thing keeps moving. You know what? When I was in high school, we had problems with cheerleaders. I went to a Christian school. I can't imagine that the Dallas Cowboys have gotten any better. And yet, how many people are watching football games in our churches and saying, boy, I'm so concerned for these little girls running around, putting on their makeup and these short things that only adults should... Wait a minute. I've heard that before. Why are these girls dressing like adults? They're not dressing like adults. They're dressing like an adulteress. And that's not adult. That's sin. We're saying, I'm so concerned for them watching these movies that tempt them to act this way. And then we won't shut anything off because we've grown up. When you look honestly at your own life this morning, honestly at the things that tug at your heart, as I would look at the things that tug at mine. I don't have a TV, but that doesn't make me any more godly. Because you know what? The devil knows he can't tempt me with that because I'm not watching it. So he tempts me through other avenues. You know, the sins of the flesh, the pride of our hearts, is just as ugly as the lust of our flesh through pornography on TV. It's all sin. So you can say, well, preacher, I don't have cable anymore. You're not talking to me. I am talking to you. Because sin is sin. And until we recognize our own weakness and our need of God's power, we'll never have victory and we'll never grow and mature like children of God ought to grow and mature.